Court will proceed to the fourth case, Fusing v. Zimmer. Mr. Jackson.
May it please the court, Judge Flom, Judge Williams, Judge Evans. Again, my name is Steve Jackson, and I again have the privilege of representing Zimmer before you. Mr. Fusing's petition for rehearing and suggestion for rehearing en banc should be denied, and it should be denied for three reasons. First, because the plain language of the holding and the policy of the Supreme Court's opinion in Unitherm make clear that it does not apply to this case. Second, because the longstanding precedent in this circuit makes clear that this panel's August 30th, 2005 decision was correctly decided. And finally, if time permits or if the court has questions, I'll deal with the other grounds asserted by Mr. Fusing that they have no basis for rehearing. First, the plain language of the holding of Unitherm makes clear that it does not apply to this case. At page 989, the Supreme Court wrote that we hold that since the respondent failed to renew its pre-verdict motion as specified in Rule 50B, there is no basis for review of respondent's sufficiency of the evidence challenge. The plain language of the holding in Unitherm confines its reach to sufficiency of the evidence. Likewise, the policy rationale articulated by the Unitherm opinion at pages 985 and 986 makes the same thing clear. When the court wrote that Rule 50B calls for the judgment in the first instance of the judge who saw and heard the witnesses. When we talk about seeing and hearing the witnesses, their bias, their interest, their demeanor, the proverbial furtive glances and sweaty palms, we are in the realm of sufficiency of the evidence, not in the realm of error of law. So, in fact, the Supreme Court's opinion in Unitherm is a direction to the Tenth Circuit, which had a singular and unique view that a Rule 50A motion without a Rule 50B motion was sufficient to preserve sufficiency of the evidence, that the Tenth Circuit must yield to the rule which governs all other circuits, and that is when sufficiency of the evidence is the claim for appeal, both Rule 50A and 50B must be invoked.
Well, didn't our August opinion weigh the sufficiency of the evidence absent Dr. Pugh's testimony?
It did, Your Honor, but it did so after first concluding that the district court made an error of law and then said that when that error of law is corrected, there is no evidence any longer. What this court did and what it says in the Keemtall case that you have the authority to do is to set right the district court's erroneous legal ruling and then look at the record. And when you concluded that at that point there was no evidence at all, it was proper pursuant to 28 U.S.C. 2106 to remand for an entry of judgment in favor of Zimmer. The key analytical point here is not so much insufficiency of the evidence, but what the nature of the underlying error is. Because once the court, as it did in this case, determined that the Daubert proceedings were improper, you're right, Judge Williams, you then concluded that there was no evidence. But that leads to the result that's given, not the appropriate standard of review. This court's opinion is correct, and there is no necessity for rehearing because the Keemtall case controls. In Keemtall, this court held that when error is properly preserved and it is error of law and it is preserved via a summary judgment motion, then this court may consider the error without the invocation of Rule 50A and 50B. Keemtall had its basis in this court's 1995 rulings in Recce and in Gramercy Mills and is longstanding. And in fact, the Keemtall rule that properly preserved error of law, preserved through a timely motion under Daubert or motion for summary judgment is the majority rule in the United States. It is the rule in the Second Circuit, the Sixth, the Eighth, the Ninth, the Tenth, and the Federal Circuits. And it's of interest to me that in the Royal Bank of Canada case, the Ninth Circuit, at page 1370, the Ninth Circuit engaged in an exhaustive review of the history of the rule that errors of law preserved via summary judgment survive without Rule 50A or 50B scrutiny. And the Ninth Circuit traced that rule all the way back to 1971 and to the 1971 volume of Wright and Miller. So I believe we can say with some confidence that for 35 years in some district courts in this country, and certainly in the Seventh Circuit since 1995 in Recre and Gramercy Mills, the rule is there is no necessity to file a Rule 50A or 50B motion when the error asserted is an error of law unrelated to the error of facts properly preserved by Daubert or by summary judgment. As a result, there is no basis for disturbing this panel's August 30th, 2005 decision when we look to Unitherm. And certainly the policy reasons that underline Kemptol as well distinguish it from Unitherm. We know that juries are not invited into the discussion on Daubert, and they're not invited to the discussion on summary judgment. Issues of witness credibility, interest, and bias are not the stuff of summary judgment motions and certainly not the stuff of Daubert motions. And therefore, the court's rule in Kemptol remains unaffected by Unitherm, and the Unitherm opinion is simply inapplicable. The other bases asserted by Mr. Feasting, I'll deal with briefly. There is no basis for this court to review or reverse its ruling on the 803.18 Federal Rule of Evidence challenge. This court spent six pages in its underlying opinion detailing the unreliability of Dr. Pugh's opinion. It noted that on causation, his opinion was invalid because there was no testing, because there was an unjustified extrapolation, and because there was no publication of this argument that he makes that hallmark, you know it when you see it, flaw in polyethylene. Nothing in the learned treatises that were read a sentence at a time to the jury changes any of that. The court also noted that there were three distinct errors in his opinion on defect. There was no testing, that he neglected other factors, and that no one in the United States in 1992 used gamma irradiation in an inert environment. None of the sentence at a time treatises read to the jury in any way deal with those errors which this court highlighted in Dr. Pugh's Daubert analysis, in which it ruled that the district court committed error by not granting the Daubert motion to exclude Dr. Pugh, and thus summary judgment would have been appropriate. I see my white light is on, and unless there are questions from the bench, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Mr. Holmes?
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Brent Holmes. I have the privilege of representing Art Feasting in this matter. When the United States Supreme Court has reviewed those instances where a losing party who did not file a post-trial motion but obtained relief from a receptive court of appeals in either granting a new trial or directing verdict or directing a judgment NOV, the United States Supreme Court has in each instance said, no, that cannot be done. In the absence of a post-trial motion after a jury verdict, you are not entitled to any relief that you did not ask for. There are no exceptions to this rule. And Unitherm is but the fourth time that the United States Supreme Court has said this. That Unitherm case and the trilogy of Supreme Court decisions which preceded it are controlling authority and mandate a dismissal of Zimmer's appeal or summary affirmance of the verdict of the jury and the entry of the judgment on that verdict. Zimmer attempts to distinguish Unitherm by saying, well, that case only involved an allegation of an insufficient evidence, while this case addressed the trial court's alleged error in admitting certain evidence that we say should not have been admitted. Well, the problem with that argument is that Zimmer hasn't read the Cohn case, which was the very first of the trilogy of cases of the United States Supreme Court reviewed in the Unitherm decision. In Cohn, the same scenario as we have here existed. In Cohn, the losing party, the defendant, filed a 50A motion seeking a directed verdict at the close of all the evidence. That motion was denied. The defendant in Cohn did not renew its request with a 50B motion. The Court of Appeals in Cohn said, well, we're going to review this. The defendant has said that the alleged legal error of the court is that it admitted evidence which should not have been admitted. In that case, it was a trespass case, and the plaintiff had the burden of proving ownership and possession of the property on which the timber had been removed. The district court admitted evidence on possession and ownership. The Court of Appeals said that evidence should not have been admitted. In this case, Dr. Pugh's testimony should not have been admitted. The Court of Appeals said you're entitled to a new trial. Justice Black, in the Cohn case, said the trial judge reviews the claimed errors in the first instance, and in the absence of a Rule 50B motion, the Court of Appeals is without power to review those alleged errors, whether they're evidentiary or whether they're errors of law. Justice Black in the Cohn case said, exercise of this discretion presents to the trial judge an opportunity, after all his rulings have been made, let me emphasize that again, after all his rulings have been made, that's rulings on evidence. He's calling the balls and the strikes. Some evidence comes in, some evidence doesn't come in. He made those rulings. Exercise of this discretion presents to the trial judge an opportunity, after all his rulings have been made and all the evidence has been evaluated, to view the proceedings in a perspective peculiarly available to him alone. He is thus afforded a last chance to correct his own errors without delay, expense, or other hardships of an appeal. A mandatory procedural step, then, precedent to asking a court of appeals for a new trial or for a judgment NOV, is to file your Rule 50 motion and have it ruled upon by the trial judge. In the absence of such a motion, the Cohn court's case said, the appellate court was without power to direct the district court to enter judgment contrary to the one the district court had permitted to stand. That's precisely what we have here in Zimmer. And there's a time deadline that the United States Supreme Court mentioned. You know, we all have to meet these deadlines. And what did the court say in that regard? Rule 50B specifically provides a period of 10 days for making a motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict. Yet the method here suggested, that was by the losing party in Cohn, would enable litigants to extend indefinitely the prescribed 10-day period simply by adoption, the expedient of an appeal. Furthermore, it would present the question initially to the appellate court, to your honors, when the primary discretionary responsibility for its decision rests in the district court. Now, it's interesting, Zimmer filed a motion with the district court for an extension of time to file a post-trial motion, but then bypassed the district court entirely, never filed such a 50B motion, now comes to you and says, give us our relief. Unitherm forcefully reiterated what the Supreme Court has held in Cohn, Globe Liquor, and Johnson. After a jury verdict, the procedural rules for seeking a new trial or judgment NOV must be strictly enforced and followed. Otherwise, the Court of Appeals is without power to review the claimed error. In Cohn, the defendant filed a motion for a new trial, but it was based on a claim of newly discovered evidence. In Unitherm, the defendant did neither, filed no Rule 50B motion nor any Rule 59 motion. And in this case, Zimmer filed no post-trial motion at all. Now, referring to Cohn, Globe Liquor, and Johnson, the court in Unitherm held, Justice Thomas writing the decision, these outcomes in those previous cases, these outcomes merely underscore our holding today. A party is not entitled to pursue a new trial on appeal unless that party makes an appropriate post-verdict motion in the district court. And they discarded the suggestion that somehow 28 U.S.C. 2106 could somehow, again, provide Zimmer with an end play to its failure to file the post-trial motion. They said that relief under that section is foreclosed. You must follow the Rule 50B and file your motion. Now, it appears that in the preliminary opinion issued in this case, this court sought to give Zimmer the relief it sought in its pre-verdict Rule 50A motion. Well, what did Justice Thomas say about that? But if, as in Cohn, Globe Liquor, and Johnson, a litigant that has failed to file a Rule 50B motion is foreclosed from seeking the relief it sought in its Rule 50A motion, in other words, the entry of a judgment, then surely respondent is foreclosed from seeking a new trial, relief it did not and could not seek in its pre-verdict motion. In short, respondent never sought a new trial before the district court and thus forfeited its right to do so on appeal. And Justice Thomas went on further and said, even if the district court was inclined to grant a new trial on the basis of arguments raised in respondent's pre-verdict motion, it was out without the power to do so under Rule 50B, absent a post-verdict motion pursuant to that rule. Consequently, the Court of Appeals was similarly powerless. Now, the opinion initially issued in this case should be withdrawn, the appeal dismissed, or the judgment summarily affirmed. Now, Zimmer has, in this most recent flurry of pleading, suggested, well, somehow this court now has the right to review a denial of a motion for summary judgment. That has been waived. That is not in their appeal. They filed a three-sentence appeal. And in that notice of appeal, they said they were appealing from the judgment of the verdict entered by the court. No mention of any error in any summary judgment. That wasn't in their brief. It's not a basis for their appeal. It's been waived. In any event, if it was an evidentiary pretrial issue on whether evidence should be issued, the court reviews that again at the time of trial. And then you give the court the chance after trial, if you think there was an error made, for the court to correct that error. Zimmer hasn't done any of that. And this court, he cites ChemCall, which we certainly object to, but if the court is inclined to look at ChemCall, then I say, look at your decision in Watson versus Medco Steel, Inc., which is at 29 Fed 3rd 274. It's a Seventh Circuit case from 94. And in that case, Your Honor, basically recognizing what Unitherm was going to eventually hold, said a party cannot challenge a denial of summary judgment after a full trial on the merits. And to preserve the issue, that party should have moved for judgment under Rule 50A, then renewed that motion after verdict under Rule 50B. So this business about summary judgment, that's not even part of this appeal. It should serve no basis at this late date for Zimmer trying to pull its chestnuts out of the fire. As Justice Thomas said, the only error in the Unitherm case was counsel failing to file their post-verdict Rule 50B motion. And this court shouldn't be here trying to assist Zimmer in coming up with some tortured exception to the rule that the United States Supreme Court has now told us four times you can't do. In fact, because it's the last chance for the district court to correct an error, what if that Rule 50B motion had been filed and considered by Judge Baker? Judge Baker would have had the discretionary authority to say, okay, you were right. Dr. Pugh shouldn't have been, his testimony shouldn't have been admitted, but in the interest of justice, I'm going to give the plaintiff a chance of a new trial. I'm going to give the plaintiff a chance to correct this Daubert problem. Oh, and by the way, the plaintiff says, Zimmer, you never produced the documents on your testing methods, which resulted in the change of your sterilization method. You stonewalled the plaintiff, and I'm going to give the plaintiff an opportunity to look at those testing records. We're going to have an opportunity for both parties to have justice in this case before we have a final decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. Mr. Jackson?
Thank you, Your Honor. To read Unitherm as expansively as learned opposing counsel suggests means that the United States Supreme Court would have had to overrule the rule, the law in seven circuits that has existed since 1971 without even so much as a footnote to that effect. I think that is a highly dubious proposition. Moreover, the reliance on Cohn and on Johnson is misplaced. The quotation that I referred to earlier at page 985 and 986, which says the deference must go to the trial court judge who saw and heard the witnesses, is a quotation from Cohn. Cohn and Johnson are very clearly limited to challenges on sufficiency of the evidence, not legal errors preserved either through a Daubert motion or through summary judgment. The procedure specifically approved of by this court in Kemptall, specifically approved by this court in Recchi and Gramercy Mills. Interestingly, the last citation that learned opposing counsel made to Watson predates Recchi, predates Gramercy Mills. Those cases, Watson and Gramercy Mills, or pardon me, Recchi and Gramercy Mills, distinguished Watson and gave us the law we have now. Properly preserved legal errors in the Daubert process or the summary judgment process survive without Rule 50A and 50B motions. The petition for rehearing should be denied. This court's August 30th, 2005 opinion should stand. Thank you very much.
Jackson, thank you, Mr. Holmes. The case is taken under advisement.